welcome. You are here with Dr. Nilda Perez with Business Foresight, creating strategies towards your extraordinary future.
Hello, and welcome to the Dr. Nilda's Business Foresight Show. Today, I have another very, very awesome guest that I've been talking to for a while. I have to tell you, I love the power of social media because social media connects you with people that you wouldn't typically become friends with. And I've met Martin Lopez a little while ago, and we've become the best friends. I tell you, love what he does. So let me tell you a little bit about Martin. Martin Lopez is a graduate of the University of Santa Barbara Spiritual Psychology Program. He is a businessman. He is an author, a speaker, and a trainer. And he wrote the book, The Curiosity Theory, which he's going to share a lot about today. The book is called The Curiosity Theory, A Path to Conflict Resolution. He wrote this from a personal experience. So those are the best books because he wrote this from a personal experience that he had, and he's actually created an entire program around this. So that's pretty fascinating. God, if we can all do that, that would be awesome. So Martin's mission is also to help individuals and teams to grow through improved communication and collaboration. So his topic today will be deeper human connection through curiosity. Thank you. Thank you, Martin, for being here. How are you today?
My pleasure. I'm excited. I'm doing great. It is absolutely awesome to connect. I love what you said about, you know, the whole thing with social media, how we get to connect with people that we normally wouldn't connect. I'm in San Diego and you're on the other side of the country.
New York.
That's right.
New York. Yeah. I also want to introduce my co-host, Rachel Calderon, who's with us today. And she's going to be making a lot more appearances on the show. So I want to introduce Rachel. Rachel, can you say hello?
Hello. How are you?
Hi, Rachel.
Hi, Martin.
So we're going to have a three-way conversation here. And of course, Martin's going to be doing most of the talking, but we're all going to kind of pop in and ask questions. And this is a very exciting time. I'm very excited to have you, Martin. Thank you so much for being here.
Oh my God, I'm so excited. Yeah, so what do you want to say? What do you want to ask me first?
I would like to ask more. How do you apply the curiosity theory in general? Like, how do you apply that to any business? Because I know because I work with all businesses.
Yeah.
You know, I would hate to pigeonhole to just, how can somebody use a curiosity theory? Because that's innovative. How could they apply that to any, you know, to any business?
Because that came out of relationship.
That came out of relationship, but business is relationship.
Yeah,
right.
Absolutely.
That's
yeah.
what I'm saying. Business is relationship, but that when that concept came about, it was through relationship, and then he applied that to his business. So,
right. So how can someone who doesn't really understand, how can somebody apply the curiosity theory to their business?
Okay. I think what happens, the curiosity theory for me is a place to go when you find yourself hitting a wall. I generally am a curious person, so I try to apply it everywhere, but I also have strategies that I apply. You know, are we okay?
Can you say that again? I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I think that for me, everybody thinks from their own perspective. Everybody has their own way of thinking. And for the most part, it works for people. You know, for the most part, the way that we go about doing what we want to do, it works. Because we develop strategy. What's that?
It doesn't always work. They just wing it. But it looks like they're landing in their people. They may have landed in one foot. Okay. But okay.
Absolutely. Well, I have something called the 10-10-80 theory.
Yeah.
And it's 10% of the people are just going to do business with you just because they just like you. And that's the way it is. And 10% will never do business. And the other 80% are going to take you or leave you. And in that, if you look at sales statistics, most people will do about 10% of the business that they get leads for.
Absolutely.
And so what I believe is that people have used their strategies to capture that 10%. So there's really not a whole lot of effort for most people. People go about doing things the way they normally do things. And then you have some people that are saying, you know, I'm going to read this book. I'm going to read that book. I'm going to expand how I do business. And then maybe they start to capture like 12, 13, 14%. So they start to expand it a little bit. But if you really go back and look at it, it really is they just start doing more numbers. There's more opportunities. So they're still capturing that 10, 11, 12%.
Right.
So if the 10-80 rule is true, and I think it is, then you have 10% of the people. And what I say is 10% of the people are going to love you even if you shoot their dog. 10% are going to hate you even if you make the mortgage payment. And 80% are just they're just not going to care. So if that's in fact the case, they just don't care. Then how do we capture those people that don't care, that can take you or leave you? Human connection. It's about connecting with a human being. Yeah. It's about we're using our strategies and that gets us what we want. But if we want more, we've got to be able to start serving other people. And that means meeting their needs, finding out what they want, listening to what they have to say. And I think the way to do that is by being curious, is listening to people when they say something, being open to their feelings and their emotions, because that's going to tell everything. People are always saying, I need this or I need that. And people are always saying, they're always saying, I feel that you, or I feel like, they're always saying that. That's just part of conversation. But we have to learn how to tune into that.
People are always expressing their dissatisfaction, what they think should be better, what they think, because remember that we never internalize a problem. The problem is always external. It's always,
yeah.
It's you people.
It's you guys.
Everybody else's fault.
It's your fault, you know?
Yeah.
And you people should fix this and you people should do that.
So, instead of taking responsibility for themselves.
Exactly. And that's said all over. That's said in relationships, that's said in business. And so we can either point that out to somebody that they're not being responsible. We can either point to somebody that that's what they're doing, or why don't we listen to them and find out, you know, this person is telling us what they need. And if I'm over here taking it personal, then it's going to be a fight. It's going to be me against them. But if I take responsibility for my own needs and say, you know what, this transaction is not about my needs, because I'm gonna meet my needs in life. I'm gonna meet my needs for love. I'm gonna meet my needs for fun. I'm gonna meet my needs for being heard, for acknowledgement, for satisfaction. I'm gonna meet my own needs. And so, Mr. Buyer, Mr. Seller, what needs do you have? How can I meet your needs? And then seek those out. And I think if we meet the needs of other people, if we identify first off those needs and meet those needs, I think that 80%, we can tap into that 80%.
Right. And get more of those people to like you.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
That makes sense, though.
That makes perfect sense. That makes sense. Because again, it's human relation. And you know, the one thing, my background is I'm a clinical social worker. So my background in therapy. This question that nobody had ever asked me before, and he said, "What is the what is the biggest problem for people? What is what are the running problems that you see?" And what I heard, which was I thought was quite bizarre, but what I heard was, "Well, you know, the main problem is that." What I explained to him was when I thought about it, and it wasn't even a long time, I said, a lot of people have resentment because they don't take responsibility for what they've done wrong. It's somebody else's fault.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where the problem lies, that, you know, so they're always looking at the other person. Part of my problem is to tease that out and to show them that, hey, well, you know, how about you? What did you bring into this? What could you have possibly done to make this happen? When did you give, like, you know, if they feel that they're not being respected, well, when did you give that person the license to disrespect you?
Yeah.
You know?
Absolutely.
And when you start turning that around and start making them somewhat responsible, yet by the same token, you know, turning it, saying, okay, so this is the problem and here's the solution, everything changes.
Absolutely. And I think there's another slice to that too. It's why do we assume that someone has to respect us? Like why, how do we then judge that that person is respecting us or not? That the action that the person is taking is that of disrespect or that of not listening to us. Like we're the ones that are deciding that.
Right.
How many times have we been in conversation with somebody where we told the person what they were doing? Or when you were told yourself that you were doing something, and in fact, you weren't doing it at all. My wife and I, she'll say, well, you're doing this. And I'm like, yeah, I'm not doing that. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm really not doing that.
Right.
Being in a 28 plus year relationship with my husband, I totally understand where you're coming from, because we ended up reading a book called The Five Love Languages.
Great book.
And that is where I learned that it's not always, we learn to understand each other's love language. And I would say not necessarily in business, you know, understand their love language,
but it applies to business
because awesome. sometimes people have a certain way of speaking to you. And you, like you said, you decide, okay, that person disrespected me, but maybe they're just a little rough around the edges. And when they speak, put it this way, Latinos, they always think that we're in a brawl because we talk loud. You know, and I laugh because I live in this neighborhood out in Atlanta and it's super quiet. And one day I was outside getting the mail and the kids were talking really loud and it really sounded like they were having an absolute brawl. I mean, it sounded like there was fighting going down and they were just talking. When I walk in the house, I'm like, what happened? What is going on?
Yeah.
And they're just talking, but they're talking really loud and they're very expressive and they're using their hands, very animated. So, but I'm outside. I'm not really understanding what's going on. So I'm like, wow, they're really loud and they're screaming and yelling. And you know how that is. So when I go and I'm like, oh, can I have some, can I have this? They're like, they look at me like, what's wrong with you? And I realize that it's also somewhat my background, where how I grew up. It's that loud voice, but I don't mean to be rude. I don't mean to sound rough and tough the way they say. They call me Mean Rachel. Would you believe that? They call me Mean Rachel. I'm like, I'm not mean. I mean, I'll tell you what I feel when I feel it, but I'm not mean. I don't mean it in a bad way.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not trying to come off as a mean person. You know, I don't cookie cut things. I don't sugarcoat over things.
Yeah, they sugarcoat. No?
No, I don't sugarcoat. But I will tell you how I feel. And if you want my honest opinion, I'll let you know. If you don't want it, I won't say anything. But I understand what you're talking about there. That I think we prejudge.
We prejudge, and then we react to what's being said. And then the reactions are either, and I say they're either curious reactions or reptilian reactions. You're either fighting back against what, you know, so I'm the kid, I'm listening to you, I'm having fun, I'm doing what I'm doing, I'm loud, I'm doing what I'm doing. And then, you know, Mean Rachel comes out, which is a preconceived notion, right? And so I'm ready to like, okay, like I'm ready to fight, like, it doesn't even matter what you say. You can come out and say, hey, I got cupcakes for everybody, or I got ice cream for everybody. I'm like, okay, you know, check for razor blades, or, you know, because there's already a conversation that exists. We call it always already listening. There's already a conversation and it's always there.
Can you repeat that, Dan? Can you repeat that part with Mean Rachel?
Mean Rachel?
After that.
I don't remember what I said.
Yeah.
That's what I think. What happens is you come out, you're saying what you're saying. You know, you come out and you have something that you need. And I think that's the most important thing to identify. Like, what is it that you needed that caused you to be in the action that you had? See, because I think it's always first about ourselves. So I may wonder, it's like, you know, you have a need for peace. You may have a need for silence. You may have a need for safety. Maybe the loud voices and stuff, maybe you didn't feel safe. I don't know. Only you know. So curiosity has me get to what the source is. So you come out, and if I have this preconceived notion that Mean Rachel's coming out, and I'm reptilian in my reactions, then I'm going to either fight you, or I'm going to run away, or I'm just going to sit there and, you know, like, let me just sit here and freeze until she leaves, and then I'm going to be back to where I was. But if I take a curious position, I say, I'm curious. Like, Rachel, I'm curious. Is what is it that you need? And then maybe you don't say it exactly at the beginning. I need you guys to be quiet, you know. But maybe you're not saying it that way, but that's the way I'm going to see it. Right? And then I look and I say, you know, it looks like we may have upset you or annoyed you. And you're like, oh no, no, I'm not upset or annoyed. I'm recording this video with my friend, Dr. Nilda, and you guys are just really loud. Oh. When you investigate, when you apply curiosity, it gives you the opportunity to investigate what's going on. And then you can actually understand. And it's different from the observation that we had. The observation was you came out and you were screaming, but that might not be what you're doing.
Okay, so how would you do that? How do you manage that in business? How do you manage something like that how do you manage that in business where, again, you don't know your customers firsthand. You may not know them personally, especially if they're new customers to you. How do you present yourself so that you're not offensive? And how do you apply the curiosity theory in a new or potential relationship?
Well, I think it's about yourself first, understanding where you're at and how you're approaching whatever's going on. I work with a lot of people that do phone sales, a lot of real estate agents that call neighborhoods and they call people, and they'll get a lead and they don't want to call the lead. So that's all over in sales. That's if you're car sales, you're in, you know, pharmaceuticals, all that. But I think the number one thing that people avoid is calling back leads. And it's not because there's anything wrong with the lead. It's because how they feel and the story they have about making the call. Would you agree? Okay, so there's a story that they got going on here. So what's the story? What is this? I'm interested in what the story is. And when we can sharpen our ability to see our own stories, our own observations, and separate those from the facts, then it gives us that little bit more access to how we feel. So maybe I feel nervous. I'm just nervous when I make phone calls, and I don't like feeling nervous. And how I'm going to respond to feeling nervous or scared or anxious is I'm not going to make the call. And that makes perfect sense. So if we think about a human being, is like, if what we want to do is avoid danger, avoid pain, then we're not going to make the call.
So let's take that down even further.
Yeah, please.
You have to know what you're afraid of.
Exactly.
What are you afraid of? So a lot of us, and that's human nature, we're afraid of rejection.
Yeah.
And that, if you break down that fear and you get to the core of that fear, if I pick up that phone and I call this total stranger who doesn't know me, and if they saw me, you know, let me give you a case in point.
Quite a few years back when I was doing therapy, I was doing home visits, and they gave me all of the mean people. All of the mean people were mine because the other social worker couldn't handle them. But, you know, there was a huge lesson to be learned. I learned how to have a relationship with these people. So I'd come in and they would be complaining. They would be like throwing things, really nasty, screaming, yelling, cursing.
Wow.
Like, here comes another one again. And, da, 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 da. And they were like, I would just hear them out. And when they were done, I was like, hi, I need to help you. And I just remember so vividly that it was so funny because they would just look at me like, you're so weird. And
you listen.
I used to tell them, you see, I know you're not mad at me. Huh? What was that?
They said, you're so weird. You listen. That's not, human beings are.
Yeah, exactly. So you're so weird, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Exactly. And so here's the thing. I was like, listen, because I know that if you really knew me, you would love me. You would be so happy that I'm here if you really knew me. But you don't really know me. So I'm going to give you time to get to know me. That made all the difference in the world. I have to tell you, by the time I was done with those clients, they really did love me. You see, I had already set the precedence. I had already told them. And I was, you know, I went through all of the minutiae. Like, yeah, I knew they were upset and they were, you know, screaming and they were, but I went through all of that and I overlooked it. How's that? I overlooked all of that and I was just addressing their needs.
Yeah.
So how can I help you? I'm here to help you. What can they do to help you? And that's not different in business.
No.
You need to meet, and even if you're in a room filled with people that are potential clients, you want to know what they need. That's the most important thing. What do they need, and how are you going to address those needs? Steve Jobs was excellent with that.
Absolutely.
He saw the problem with that boombox, and then he saw the problem with the Walkman. Yeah, so you have now a smaller thing to hold, but you have all of these cassettes that you have to bring with you. I'm going to simplify. Yeah. So he was listening to the problems, and he solved it.
Date us that far back?
Yeah, right.
She didn't go to
8-track. Sorry about that.
She didn't say 8-track.
There you go. Thank you. I didn't say records.
That's right. So
45 to be exact.
Like when I hear what you said, so how I would apply to what you did, the curiosity theory, is that you acknowledge them, you acknowledge where they were upset, they were throwing things, they were angry, they were all those. You acknowledge their emotion, their feeling, their you use emotional intelligence to connect with the emotions. And then you listened,
right,
which is a human need. Humans, we all have needs, and everything that we do, Marshall Rosenberg said, everything we do in service of our needs. And they had a need, and your need, you connected to their need to be heard, which is listening. Because people,
right,
for the most part, don't listen to other people. We're waiting for our opportunity to say what we want to say.
Right.
And it's right, not like a bad right thing. It's kind of put together that way.
Well, how many times, and I've seen this time and time again, when people are talking, that person is not even listening. They're thinking about their response. What are they going to respond to what they're hearing? So they're not even hearing it through because you're so busy listening to their response.
Yeah.
This. They'll hear like a couple of words and they're like ready to hit back.
Yeah. My turn. You know, and how many couples say, you know, they think it's great. Goes, yeah, I finished his sentences for him. Like, yeah, I don't appreciate that.
No.
Sentences.
I'd like to give my sentences my own shot. You know, I'd like to try to get to the period, you know, myself. What the heck, you know, even if I do it wrong.
Yeah.
They think it's like, you know, how many times have couples have said that? Like it's a great thing, right?
Right, exactly. And why? Why should you be thinking for someone else? Well, I had somebody tell me, I know what he's thinking better than he does. Well, how did you do that?
Yeah.
Wow. Right, but can I tell you?
And we
that wonder- is the way too. We tell, I've heard people say, well, you know what? This is what they need. And I'm like, how do you know your customer needs that? Yeah. Well, because they should. Oh,
exactly.
Well, that takes care of that. That's going to make them want to buy it. There you go.
Exactly.
You know, I'm like, you're not selling to yourself. You are selling to someone else. You need to know what their needs are, not what you think they need.
Yes.
But that curiosity, let's go back to that curiosity.
Well, that works for the 10%.
Love it.
That works for
curiosity,
the 10%, right?
Curiosity, yes. But why can't that work for the 80% also?
Because the 10% is a strategy. So knowing what my customer needs works. It works for those 10% that need that. But you got 90% that might not need that. Curiosity taps into the possibility of what they actually need, like the wonderment. Well, maybe you don't need this, and it taps into what could be possible. Like you said, when you let's go back to your story. So you acknowledged, you connected, you listened, and then you created this possibility. You said, you know, you might, you know, you're probably going to love me. And you didn't say you're going to love me. Like you're going to, in ordering the person. What I hear you did is you said, you know, you kind of like took this idea out like a light bulb, you know, and said, you're probably going to like me. And they kind of looked at the light bulb and said, okay, yeah. And because it was so genuine, it was so authentic. And people connect to that, because it's all about human connection. So when we create possibility, we can do that, but we can't create possibility if there's no human connection, if there's no respect, if it's not safe, if the environment that we're speaking into is not respectful and safe, we're not going to be able to create anything, because all we're going to have is a reptilian reaction. And so the curiosity theory, it takes that into consideration, that Maslow's hierarchy of needs is survival, safety, love and belonging, self-esteem, okay. self-actualization, right? And when we're operating in one of those domains, there's only certain modalities that we can physically, mentally, emotionally operate through. You know, if you hold my head underwater, you know, I need air. I'm in survival. Right. I'm going to scratch. I'm going to do anything.
Right.
But if I have but if it's a self-esteem situation, it's different. I may not be scratching. The problem is that we take guns to knife fights, and we relate to self-esteem challenges as though our oxygen is being taken from us. We can start to distinguish that, hey, this is a self-esteem thing, and it's my self-esteem, not yours. And my self-esteem is in question because I'm questioning it, not you. Because the person having the experience is ourselves. So if we can identify what part of the Maslow's hierarchy of needs we're operating in, going, you know what, I have a need for fun right here, and I feel good about myself when I'm having fun, or I have a need for accomplishment, and I don't feel like that need's being fulfilled, and that's why I'm angry, or that's why I'm frustrated. We start to identify that, then we start to then maybe not put that on somebody else. We could say, that's my need, and what's your need? The other person's like, well, I just don't feel safe in the conversation. Okay, great. Well, let's work on that one.
Right, right. And so, again, with that same theory, it's why don't we take what we have and kind of repackage it? Mm-hmm. So, you know who was really good at that was Beto Perez with the Zumba. Mm. Well, how many people will not tell you, I can't dance? Well, you don't have to know how to dance. This is exercise.
Yeah.
And in the process of learning to exercise, they've learned how to dance. Do you see? And he was like, you know what? He was like to this country from Colombia and said, everyone here exercises all the rage. Well, heck, I've not invented a treadmill, and I've not invented, you know, a stationary bike, but I know how to dance, and I can show people how to exercise with dance.
Yeah.
Do you see?
Yeah.
So that's where he got the 80%, because the 10% that would come to him for dance was a small percent. He tapped into the 80% because he took what he had and he repackaged it to their needs.
Absolutely.
That's genius.
Yeah.
Possibility. That's a tremendous, you know, again, there you go.
Yeah. Possibility taps into that. Possibility taps into that other thing. You know, when you got those mean people, those were the 10% that hated you and they didn't even know you.
Yeah.
And you created this possibility.
They hated everybody. And I was just part of their 80% people that they hated.
Exactly.
But I was like, no, I choose to be the 10%. My choice. And
absolutely.
I'm going to show you how we're going to do this. And I did it, meeting their needs. I didn't go there with, this is the agenda.
Yeah.
Okay, this is what we're going to do.
Yeah.
This is what I have to do with you. And, you know, and if you're mean, I'll react mean back. And I was like, I'm not going to be mean to you because you're a lovely person. You just don't know it.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're a good person. You just don't know it.
Yeah.
Yeah, me too.
Well, sometimes it's also our response to others. So we have to pretty much be aware of our reaction when we start a conversation or when we bring something. I know that that's the case. Like with my husband and I have to, you know, when I want to ask a question, I do like, so, you know, I try to do like soft, high-pitched voice so that he doesn't see me as, why are you pushing me? More like, oh, she's
why are you ordering me?
Why are you ordering me to do something? Sweetheart, can you
exactly,
you know, fix the bushes versus can you go get those bushes fixed for me?
Right. You were supposed to do them last week, right?
Yeah.
And then the response level.
It's been on the honey-do list for 3 weeks.
Exactly.
Yeah, and you know what? Some people do not like a list like that. They don't like that react, you know, that list at all.
Yeah.
So It's hard for some people to, so I get what you're saying, because it's hard for some people to just take orders.
Yeah.
So if we even us as human beings, especially in sales, okay, or business owners, that we want to be able to be successful at selling what we believe in, I think that also bringing that approach, you know, hey, I have something that can help you, you know, and giving them that opportunity to say, well, yes or no, too, you know.
Yeah. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. I don't know anybody. I've never met a human being that's really good at taking orders, like authentically good at taking orders. I've met mm-hmm. people that I thought were, you know, I've had friends that, or you know, customers or. I've seen people and I really thought that they were like, oh my God, you're so good at, like, you know, doing what other people say. And when it gets down to it and you really talk to them, they're like, I hated that people pushed me around. Mm-hmm. You know, you know, when you really get to it, it's, mm-hmm. you know, people want autonomy. People want to be able to say what they want to say. But mm-hmm. what's missing is the vocabulary to have us get there. And the curiosity theory not only talks about what we've spoken about, but it also then introduces this vocabulary. It's an expansion of the words that we use. So maybe we use words like anger, maybe we use frustration. So we start to do with the curiosity theory, we start to introduce new other emotional words, expand your IQ, your EQ, your emotional intelligence. And then you start to listen, you start to be connected to more of your emotions. You know, in my book, I talk about yum and yuck. You know, yum and yuck is like, I like it, so it's yummy, and I don't like it, so it's yucky. And that's kind of like the basic human intelligence. And then we say, well, you know, kind of, you know, we say different words, and we start to be able to describe it. Well, it's tangy, or it's, you know, you start to do, but the more words that you can use to describe things, the more powerful you can be. Because you can interact not only with other people, but you can interact in your own brain, in your own body, in your own spirit, right?
And so,
like you said, Rachel, it's about awareness, you know? I think you said the same thing, Dr. Nilda. It's about, first, it's awareness. It's about understanding what's going on here. You're not going to do anything if you don't know what's going on here. If you're doing something to help somebody, that you think you're really trying to help somebody, you really aren't. You're really trying to do your thing. You know, and people have challenged me. They said, well, no, well, what about a kid that's about to fall off a cliff and I got to save the kid? Well, who's the person that you just said, I got to save the kid? You don't know that kid wants to be saved, but that's your need to save, not the kid's need to be saved. Hmm. And you know what I mean?
But what if, right, if we switch that around mm-hmm. and tell the kid, why do you want to jump off? Like, why would you want to do that? You know, what is the outcome? What is the desired outcome?
Yeah.
And he'll tell you the desired outcome. Oh, then why do you think that outcome is the best outcome?
Yeah.
How about talking them down
yeah.
rather than you saving them? Because yeah. there's a good chance that when you're not looking, they're going to jump.
Yeah.
And the same thing happens with business. You know, and Rachel could definitely attest to this, and I would like her to talk a little bit about this. There are people that have come to us and said, you know, we want your business. We love what you do. We want what you do. But we realize that they're not ready, that's you're not there. And we're like, it's not that we don't want you. This is not a personal rejection, but that we will be doing you a disservice. You don't want us right now. You don't want us. You think you want us, but you don't want us because what we do, you're not ready for that. But here's what you're going to do to get ready, and then you can come, and then you will want us. And I learned that, and this is something that Rachel and I have adapted in our business. But I have to tell you one of the things, and I learned that from doing triage. When I was doing triage on the phone, so I had a client that would say, you know what, I want you. I want you because I have this problem. And I'm like, you really don't want me. Let me just give you a case in point.
Yeah.
Working with young children, That's not my forte. It was never my forte to work with young children. So I would tell them, no, you really don't want me because the specialty that you want is da 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 da, and I don't have that. So you don't want me. I'm giving them the opportunity to reject me. See how I turn that around?
Yeah.
I flipped it. And sometimes that authenticity, I tell you, I've had people that when the children are older and they've had a reason to seek me out, they came back and they would tell me, you know what? Now this he's 15, she's 17, and now you can see her. You know? Yeah. And I'm like, absolutely, this is great. But can they say, you know what I loved about you? That you were honest with me. You were honest. You told me. So authenticity really goes a long way.
Absolutely.
What would you say to that, Rachel?
I would totally agree. And also sometimes like our program that we have, we sometimes even tell them, you know, in a very nice way, we have had to reject certain clients because what we teach is sometimes very intense. And if we see that with the minimal things that we give them, they can't handle, we're like, we don't want you. We want you to succeed. We want every client that comes through those doors to succeed. We want success. Mm-hmm. So sometimes we've had to say, you're not ready for that because it's sometimes in business, it takes a lot of emotions. You go through a lot of emotional up and downs. It's a lot of work. And I always tell people, and Lilda goes, wow, you make it sound a little tough, you know, because I was with a client yesterday, as a matter of fact. I said, it's a lot of work. I said, it's going to seem like a lot of work. And it is. And she was like, could you have been a little bit more blunt?
That's right. I said,
because I have to
seriously.
I have to let them know that emotionally, they're going to feel overwhelmed. But the work really is not that hard. It's once they get past that emotional state, then they can get the work done. Mm-hmm. You know?
A lot of people, a lot of trainers, a lot of people that are program trainers like yourselves call me in to work with them before because we get people, Curiosity Theory, what we do is we get people to be able to identify what that thing is. Like we talked about the discomfort, like the discomfort is connected to the need, my need for maybe structure or my need for whatever that need can be. And what we do is we teach people to connect to their needs. It could be for, connection. It could be a need for harmony, companionship, whatever those needs are. People start to connect with those needs. And then they start to discover, this is why I need that. This is why the discomfort is worth it, because something's on the other side. But it's on the other side of the need, not the discomfort.
Right.
You know, and does that make sense?
Right.
And when people
absolutely
when people start to do that, then the discomfort then it no longer becomes it no longer becomes avoiding pain. It becomes moving toward pleasure. So let's say, for instance, and I'm going to show you, and I should have put this on a thing, but these are, you can't really see it very well. This is called a needs list. So this is when we talked about Maslow's hierarchy of needs. What it is these are all the different areas. And then we added self-transcendence. So it's survival, safety, belonging and love, self-esteem, self-actualization, and self-transcendence. So what we do is we teach people to identify what need is in play. So when we talked about self-esteem, somebody may have a need for clarity or understanding. And believe it or not, those are the little needs that they affect our self-esteem. If we don't understand something, we may feel stupid. If we're not clear on something, we may feel dumb. You know,
bad feeling.
It's a terrible feeling. Yeah.
That's a horrible feeling. Yeah.
Yeah.
So you don't want to do that because who wants to be dumb?
Yeah. Who wants to be dumb? Well, dumb is a story. See, dumb isn't real. Dumb is the story. So what we
absolutely.
Do is, what's the story? Like, so we take the observation and what's the meaning you made? So if I'm not, let me pick out another one. So if I don't feel like I'm effective, I may feel incompetent. I may feel stupid. Well, I may feel stupid is a story. Or I'm stupid is a story. It's not true. Like somebody may say, Martine, you're stupid.
It's not true.
But that's not true. It's just what somebody says. Yes. And even if I say I'm stupid, that's a story. I may not know three letters in the ABCs, but that's just three letters I don't know. Saying that I'm stupid is creating a story about the three letters I don't know. If I don't know physics, I just don't know physics. It doesn't mean I'm stupid.
You never learned it.
I didn't learn it. But we use meanings to describe things that cause us to feel particular ways. If we can identify that, and this is the feelings list. And so these are feelings that are present when our needs are being satisfied. And these are feelings that are present when our needs are not being satisfied. So if I have a need for, and I'm just going to make this up, okay? So if I have actually I'm going to be really authentic. So I love to do this. I love to talk to people about this stuff. And I mean, look, so what for me, coming from where I come from, I barely made it out of high school. I didn't go to college. I went to college a little bit, but I didn't do college very well. So for me to feel competent at speaking and getting my point across is huge for me. It's huge for me. So, and I look and say, it's a self-actualization need, and it's fulfilling my personal potential. So when I feel competent, I feel I'm like happy and I feel joy, because I'm feeling a personal potential. When I'm not being competent, I feel a different way. So what we do is we teach people to identify the feelings that are connected to the needs. And you can say, well, when I'm not feeling confident, maybe I'm feeling confused. Maybe I'm feeling agitated. Maybe I'm feeling annoyed, aggravated, displeased, angry, furious, because I'm not getting that need that I have met. So is it somebody else's responsibility for me to feel competent? No, it's my need. So how we relate to people is we push our needs onto other people and say, you're not listening the right way. You're not hearing what I have to say, versus I'm really frustrated because I'm not being very competent in communicating what I want to communicate. And let me take responsibility for that. And when we start to do that, when we start to do that, then we then take personal responsibility for ours. Now, the trick is not to use it on people like it's some kind of, you know, Jedi mind trick, that we're going to use curiosity on people, because we can then start to assume what somebody's going on and get really good at assuming what people are experiencing. And we're going to be right a lot of the times, but what we miss in the assumption is we miss the connection. It's connection that why people are doing what they're doing. Like, what is their need? What is their emotion that they're feeling? And when you can connect to other people's emotions and other people's needs, it's a connection that's really, really powerful, because the person's been heard, the person's been gotten, the person has been connected at a level that maybe they didn't even know. And something happens. It's just like the magic starts to happen. And then people then go to you for that connection. They go for you for that. That like, God, Dr. Nilda, she like really sees that I don't like social workers, that I don't like the people that come and knock on my door, that I don't like it, because they don't listen to me. They preach to me and tell me what I'm doing wrong. But Dr. Nilda comes and listens to me.
Right.
You know?
Right. And so I've taken that background and I've combined it with my background also in business, and I've been able to identify and understand and help people so much better with that background.
Yeah.
You know, and that's priceless. Priceless to be able to get them and to be able to understand their emotions, because business is emotional. Mm-hmm. Buying a house is emotional. You know, not being, you know, all of these things are very emotional. Going for a mortgage is emotional. It's a very emotional thing. So they're not separate. You know, I always tell people, business is not because, oh, you have like a business mindset. No, yeah.
it's all
part of the emotion. Well, it's all business and it's all emotional.
Yeah.
I think that's interchangeable. Because if it's all business, it's all emotional.
Yeah.
Because we feel emotions on every level. It's the fear factor. Is the will I succeed factor?
I would say that we're concerned that this particular client has not fully committed because of, I guess, a reason. And I think that we both feel this way. They haven't fully committed. They said they were interested, but they haven't committed just yet. Now, could that be something that we're feeling?
It's only your feeling.
And they're probably like, I just haven't gotten around to it yet. I just have not had the time to like, you know, make that decision yet.
It could be anything. And that's where I suggest people go, is it could be anything. Because if you nail it, if you take it and you say, it's this, that's it, then you're going to focus on that. You're going to try to fix that. But if it could be anything, it could just be anything. And then you then maybe look at yourself and go, okay, how am I relating to this whole thing? What am I doing right now? Am I feeling?
Can you repeat that again? I'm sorry.
It's how you're, then you got to look at how you're relating to everything. I'm going to say it how I do it. Okay. This is how I do it.
Okay.
This is how I experience what I think you're talking about. So I get a lot of clients.
Everyone froze.
Check.
I'm not frozen.
I'm not frozen.
Martin is
you're not frozen.
No, you're frozen.
Okay, you're back.
Now we're back. Okay. So, repeat that again. So
this is how
feeling
I relate to
was left off.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So this is how I relate to what I think you're saying. And this is how I think it happens for me, what you're saying. And I could tell me if I'm wrong. Okay. So I'm going to say what I'm going to say. And if I'm wrong, just say that's wrong. And I'm okay with that. Okay. Because I'm guessing. So curiosity is guessing. I'm going to guess. I think I know what you're saying. So, but I'm also going to be letting you know I'm guessing. So you tell me if my guess is right or wrong. And I think that has a lot more respect than just telling people what they're thinking. So my guess is how it occurs for me is I talk to people every day. I talk to 10 people a day. I'm going over finances for 10 people a day at least, pre-approving people constantly, constantly, constantly. And you know what? A lot of those people don't do business with me. It's just some of them don't do business with me. So if I tried to guess what the reason everybody didn't do business with me without asking them, I'm just guessing. So I'm deciding what that is for them. And then I'm going to relate to it as though what I said is that. If I say, I don't know, I just don't know. It's a lot easier to exist for me personally. It's a lot easier for me emotionally, mentally, physically, in every way to go, I don't know, and not have to go figure it out than it is to come up with a reason that I made up and then live with that as that's the reason. Because that reason that I come up with is most likely probably right. Not true, but that's going to influence everything else I do.
Got it.
Right.
So, mm-hmm. So if I'm giving power to my judgments or my theories, if I give those all the power, then that's going to tell me how to operate. But if I stay open and curious and just go, I'm wondering, maybe I call him up and ask him, hey, John, I just, you know, this is Martin from martinlopez.com. And I was just wondering, I was wondering if was there a reason why you didn't choose me as your loan officer? And then just listen to what they have to say. I have done that so many times. They've told me, I didn't like the real estate agent and I thought you had to work with them. They told me, my mother didn't, the money that my mother was going to give me, it didn't come through. You know, and it's like they were embarrassed. You know, there's so many different reasons. And I can tell you a lot of my business has been picked up because I went and called John and asked him, Samantha, John, Harriet, I have a question. I didn't hear back from you. And I was just curious, did I say something? I'm going to investigate. And as I investigated, I created, like what I said in Maslow's hierarchy of needs, I'm going to write this out right here because it's hard to see. So I created and related to them in safety, created respect and safety for the conversation. That then allows us to move up to the next section, which is love and belonging, which is human connection, which allows us to move to the next section with self-esteem. This is where trust starts happening, where people start to tell you, you know what, oh, I'm getting a divorce. You know, and really I'm getting a divorce and I was trying to figure, okay, let's have that conversation. Do you want to have that? You know, so it gives us the opportunity to have the conversations that we didn't have because of what was going on with that person. If we decide up front, we're going to relate to that conversation as though this is it.
And you may not call them up and have that response level that if you would have left it open and said, hey, you know, what could it be? Yes. Or, you know, then they would have told you, would have given them that level of trust is what you're saying. And then they would have possibly told you. And then you would really know the truth behind it.
Yeah. And so if we have the 10-10-80 rule, right? And we're going to get 10% of our business, right? We're just going to get 10% of the business we're going to get. So let me do it this way here.
Interesting.
So let me just write this up really quick. I should go on my wall here. So this is 10%. This is 10%. And this is 80%. Okay. So this is 10%. This is 10%. This is 80%. So 10% of the people are going to do business with me, even if I shoot their dog. 10% are not going to do business with me, even if I make their mortgage payment for them. They just don't like me. Curiosity has me tap into this. So what if I just was curious and just got another 10% from this?
Right.
That creates 18% of my business. I've almost doubled it.
Right.
Get another 2%, I've doubled my business just by being curious. Now my strategy for doing my business is going to get me this. So I'm not going to stop doing my strategy. The curiosity theory, we're not telling salespeople to stop doing their strategy. Do your strategy because it's just going to give you that 10%. It's going to give you the foundation of your business. When that person walks away, you might want to say, hey, I'm curious. Excuse me. You know, I'm curious. And be curious about that person because your strategy didn't connect with that. So do your strategy. And when it doesn't work, be curious.
Got it.
Love it. I love it. Love it. Love it.
I love it.
Yes.
I think it answers a lot of our questions.
You know, this is the thing. Like what the curiosity theory has given me, it's given me the ability to not be offended and not be embarrassed and to own if I'm embarrassed and just to be authentic. It's like, I don't know, you know, and that to me works for me versus, you know, the way I was defensive before. So you would say what you just said and there's no reason, you're like totally loving, but I would be defensive. Like, you know, and it's just like, why do we need to do that? Like, it's like, wow, what a loving gesture. You're supporting me, you know? And I just, I appreciate that. And that's what curiosity has given me. It's given me the ability to be curious and be able to just listen and love and accept. And I think that's a great thing.
So, okay. So again, I'm very excited about this. And thank you so much for being a part of our show. This is important. I love this show. I love the show. I love showcasing people like you who are smart and have, you know, invested a lot of time in what you do. And it's an honor to have you on. Thank you so much.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
So, yeah.
Keep doing what you're doing too.
I want to thank you for being with us on Business Foresight, always creating strategies towards an extraordinary future. Remember, I'm here with you with strategies every Saturday. I'll see you next week.